You are listening to Over and Back's Basketball Mysteries of the 1970s. Today's mystery is, how great was Nate Thurman's quadruple-double? All right, welcome to Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason. With me, as usual, is Rich, and we are here to talk about the late, great Nate Thurman. He unfortunately passed away from leukemia on July 16th. He was 74 years old, one of the great players, of course, of all time in NBA history, one of the top 50 voted on in 1996. Rich, we're going to talk about a really interesting aspect of Thurman's career in particular. He is one of four players officially to have quadruple doubles in NBA history.
Yeah, it's quite the accomplishment. Of course, there is always the issues of, you know, blocks not being counted and that sort of stuff, and assists not being counted. So I'm sure, and we'll talk about that later, maybe there was another person who might have had, or people will talk a little bit about people that might have had or could have had, or, you know, ones that had the most likely chance of doing it. But for as far as we're concerned, yeah, Nate Thurman's one of four all-time to do it. Of course, there's a fifth game for astute basketball fans, but Hakeem Olajuwon, he did it in March 3rd, 1990, but it was later disallowed. They gave him one extra assist, so they did not let that happen. Stand for that. So as it stands, as of today, right now, we have four official times that a guy has had a quadruple-double in NBA history. That's an insane accomplishment too. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the Olajuwon game, apparently they tried to tack on an extra assist after the fact. So
hey, whatever, you know, nine, that's close. Yes. Enough, right? They were like, nine's almost 10. Why not?
Right. They're pretty brazen about that. Yeah, so Thurman's took place, it was October 18th, 1974. His first game as a Chicago Bull, actually. He had 22 points, 14 rebounds, 13 assists, and 12 blocks. We'll talk a little bit more about how he got to Chicago in a minute, but only the beginning of the second season in which blocks and steals were tracked. So it would have been, one of the first chances for that to ever happen. Of course, it would not have been official before then. There is an oral history of it, not an oral history, but Thurman recounted this on an article on NBA.com, he talked. It was written in his own words, and he basically said, "You know, I'm obviously very proud of this accomplishment, but you and I know that probably it happened a lot in the '60s," and talked about Wilt and Russell and Oscar plus himself as guys who were candidates to have done it before. He quoted, "I'm not trying to brag, but there were games where it was ridiculous the number of shots I blocked. When I was young, there were nights when guys couldn't come close to getting shots off me. Only Russell could have blocked more in his career." And he also mentions that basically the thing that he really remembered about the game at the time is that afterward he went to his apartment, he was just dead. He didn't even realize, you know, that he had had the those numbers until the next morning, and no one really talked about even triple doubles at the time. So the fact that, you know, really it took a while for the significance of that, for anyone to kind of really notice that accomplishment, because it was just, you know, it, like I said, it was blocks and steals were still pretty new to the NBA. So it was kind of not really within anyone's imagination to take note of it, you know, like we do today.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it is an interesting quote that he brings up, of course, of the guys in the 60s and him himself. I mean, you look at a guy who at this point, you know, when he comes to Chicago, and people that have seen him in Chicago knows that that's not kind of the, you know, Nate Thurman was just a beast when he was in San Francisco and obviously Golden State Warrior as well, when they rebranded. Yep. Moved to Oakland. So when you see images and videos, because there's a pretty good video, I know NBA.com released a pretty cool video as well, kind of talking about him. And that's a guy who, you know, Wilt is on record saying it. I think Bill Russell's on record saying it. Like, that guy blocked us a lot. Like, he's one of the few guys that, like, no matter what, we just had so much trouble getting a shot off. And you watch that highlight video, and there's Kareem doing the skyhook, and, you know, Nate's sending it away. There's, you know, Wilt doing his thing, and Nate's sending it away. So it's just, it's very interesting to see that. Or to hear it in his own words as well, of like a man that's like, really? Like, I probably had a lot more of these, but, you know, now it matters, even though, you know, before I probably, but we're talking about a guy who wasn't in his prime when he got this. I mean, really, you know, he was still very good, but was probably a good, you know, 4 or 5 years outside of his, like, amazing prime, and he'd be out of the league, and, you know, I think about 2 or 3 years after this. But it's just, again, it'd be so interesting to know how many times he and how many times, you know, guys like Wilt, Russell, of course, Oscar Robertson is one that was mentioned, how many they might have had, you know, we kept track of those. But, you know, then again, we've been keeping track of them for a while and there's still only, you know, four. So it's not something that just kind of comes a lot either.
Yeah, I am a little bit skeptical of the idea that it was like a common occurrence. And any of those players, like they could have done it. You know, there's certainly it's possible. You know, Oscar, of course, had a lot of triple doubles. But he certainly had a lot of chances to do it. The other guys, you know, weren't necessarily quite as known for the triple doubles. The years that he was getting a lot of assists in the late 60s, certainly a possibility. Russell maybe, but you know, he didn't really have a lot of triple doubles, at least not recorded one. So I still think that the quadruple double is likely to be, you know, maybe there's a handful of other ones, but I'm guessing that it was not like a frequent occurrence, like, you know, no, like he suggests. So
absolutely not. And I actually, in a little bit of, you know, in prepping for this article, I wanted to look at how many guys got like really close, how many got to like 9 points and not, you know, they couldn't get to 10. And it's actually super interesting of how few times like these weird oddities. So here's the number of games with 10 plus rebounds, 10 assists, 10 blocks, but then less than 10, or, you know, we couldn't get to 10 points, zero. Nobody's ever done that. Nobody's gotten, you know, less than 10 points, but had everything else. Zero times as well has somebody had less than 10 rebounds, but everything else. So that hasn't been the deciding factor. 62 times has happened where guys have had 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 of blocks, but less than 10 assists. And as you can assume, it's a lot of the names that you would probably associate with that sort of stat line. Dikembe Mutombo is the all-time leader with 10. Hakeem Olajuwon has 9. David Robinson has 8. And then a little interesting question to pose to you. Of course, this isn't, you know, a 70s thing, but Hassan Whiteside, he has 4 already in his 2 years in the league. That might be his thing, you know, that sort of triple double. The you know, I got 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 blocks, but man, I can't assist the ball, because he really doesn't pass ever. So he'd be a very interesting one, and like legitimately ever pass. Have you ever looked at his numbers?
Yeah, they're very, very low.
Like,
I know.
He doesn't pass, like, he has no idea. Like, so he might be the king of this award, because it's gonna be very hard for him to ever get 10 assists, but it's really cool. And then, of course, 10 points or 10 plus points, 10 plus rebounds, 10 plus assists, but less than 10 blocks. Well, a lot.
Yeah.
I don't need to list every single triple double ever, but essentially, yeah, there you go. The blocks are obviously going to be the hardest aspect of that for any player, because there's a certain, you know, there's a size issue in there. And that's, I think, again, it's just a perfect confluence of a lot of stuff happening. Right. I remember Andre Kirilenko was a guy who in the 2000s, everybody was, okay, this guy's a walking quadruple double. He can do it.
Yeah.
And like, even he had trouble doing it. Like, he got very close a bunch of times, but it's not something that's that easy to do.
Yeah, he did.
You got to be all over the place. Like,
yeah, he had a number of those, the five by fives, you know, five in each category. But yeah, he never was able to reach the quadruple double. The other guys who did it, for the record, Alvin Robertson in 1986 did it. He was the only person to do it with 10 steals instead of 10 blocks. And then Olajuwon, a few weeks after the one was taken away from him, later in March of 1990, he was able to do it against Milwaukee. 18 points, 16 rebounds, 10 assists, 11 blocks. And then 4 years later, against Detroit, David Robinson did it. 34 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 block. Alvin Robertson's was 20 points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 steals. So those are the four. A pretty remarkable accomplishment, obviously, for them. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty rare it's pretty common for there to be guys who have 10 or more blocks. That's been done by 43 players for a total of 155 times. Elmore Smith has the record with 17 on this is funny. It was actually October 28th, 1973. It was the Lakers' ninth game of the season. So that record has stood since almost the beginning of when blocks were, accumulated. He also had like two other games of like 14 or more, like right within like a month. He went crazy for a while and then fell off. But the guys who have the records, or who have the most, Mark Eaton has it 19 times, and Manute Bol has it 18 times. But only 18 players have games with 10 or more steals. And Alvin Robertson actually did it 4 times. Clyde Dexter did it 2 times. Everyone else did it just once. So that's much more uncommon. I think the record is 11. It's tied with a couple guys. Larry Keenan, I know, is one of them. So so if you're going to do it, you're much more likely to do it with blocks than you are to do with steals, which is why, like, I wonder, like, if Oscar Robertson, I mean, he certainly may have done it, but it's not like sure. It's not like it's a sure thing that he did it just because he had all the triple doubles. I mean, it's possible, but it's that the 10 or more steals is so rare, and maybe it was more common in the 60s. Obviously, you know, a lot more stats because a lot more possessions then, but still, you know, the idea that it's, you know, a definite is, it's questionable to me.
Yeah, and blocks and steals are always going to be a little tougher because that's one that you can't control. I mean, you can, for the most part, control your points. You know, the guys are feeding you the ball. You can a lot of times control your rebounds, you know, really going out there and getting an assist, you know, as long as your teammates are scoring. But blocks and steals, like, if you're at, like, 8 and they're like, oh, man, I can't get a shot up over this guy today, they might not shoot over you anymore. Like, you know, if you're stealing the ball a bunch, you got Gary Payton on you and he's got 8 steals or whatever, you might just say, you know what, I can't dribble right now. How about you guys take the ball up or whatever? Or, you know, you take the ball away from that guy if he's really on that day. So those are always ones that you look at as far as controlling, you have the least opportunity to really control those versus the others, which I'm sure it plays a part in why they can kind of get stifled that easily.
Yes. So as far as the guys who came really close, who players who missed by 1 to 2 would have gotten a quadruple double except for missing one thing. Rick Barry, Larry Steele played for the Blazers, Johnny Moore, Larry Bird, who actually sat out the fourth quarter, could have gotten it, and was even told, like, oh, I think it was an assist or a steal that he was behind. You could do this, you have one more. And he's like, it's not worth it. Michael Ray Richardson, actually toward the end of his career with the Nets, just before the drug suspension. Clyde Drexler, who just barely missed on it twice, and of course Olajuwon in the case we talked about earlier. So, yeah, and the closest to a quintuple double that I could find, it's not even that close. This dates back to 84, because that's when the play-index search goes. It was March 10th, 1987. Hakeem, again, he had 38 points, 17 rebounds, 12 blocks, 7 steals, and 6 assists. So, I think he's the only player who has 6 or more in all of those categories. So we should talk a little bit about Nate Thurman, just overall career, just a little bit. He was a native of Akron, Ohio. In fact, he says he grew up 6 blocks from where LeBron grew up, and he also teamed with Gus Johnson, who was famous for playing with the Bullets, a fierce dunker and great defensive player in high school. That must have been quite the high school team, especially on the defensive end. He led his team to 2 finals in 64 and 67, and 6 conference finals during his career. He is one of 4 players who had 20 points and 20 rebounds in a season. Will Chamberlain, who did it like 10 times, Jerry Lucas, Bob Pettit, and Thurman, who all did it once or twice. And only 1 of 5 players to average 15 rebounds in their career, along with Wilt, Russell, Bob Pettit, and Jerry Lucas. He began his career in the 64 season playing alongside Wilt, playing power forward, even though it kind of went against his strengths. But he, along with Wilt, helped lead the Warriors to the 64 finals as a rookie. They lost to the Celtics, as teams often would in the finals in the 60s, as we've
especially Wilt. Gone over. Yes. Especially teams with Wilt. Yes. Yeah.
Then the Warriors kind of Wilt had some health issues, and they struggled out of the gate the next season. They didn't have much depth, and then Wilt was traded to kind of start a rebuilding process, which happened pretty quickly. In the 65 season, he actually had 42 rebounds in a game, which is more than any player's ever had outside of Wilt and Russell. And then the next season, he was joined by Rick Barry, and then they led the Warriors to the finals a year later in 67, losing to the 76ers. He was actually second in MVP voting that year.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive numbers. And yeah, this is a guy who, again, and we'll talk about this here in a little bit, a lot of times did get overshadowed in a lot of ways by Wilt and by Russell and by a few others, but really shouldn't have. I mean, that guy was, he was that good. I mean, that you look at that second in MVP voting, there you go. I mean, that's a guy who's right there in the mix, even if history doesn't sort of tell that tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from 67 to 70, he actually averaged 20.6 points per game and 20.3 rebounds per game. That was during the time where Barry left for the ABA, left the team with Jeff Mullins. They later traded for Jerry Lucas, but that combination never worked quite that effectively. Injuries to Thurman hurt. He missed like 2 of those seasons. He missed almost half the season for each one. So the Warriors were fairly middling during that time. They made the playoffs, but didn't make any deep runs during that time. Mm-hmm. And Slam Magazine had a good Q&A with him, and they he basically asked Thurmond, you know, was it frustrating being compared to Chamberlain and Russell all the time? And he said, you know, I wasn't always compared to them. Wilt was offensive, I was defensive. Muhammad Ali needed Frazier to show his greatness, you know. I held them down, and that was good enough for me. I was different from either one. Russ was more defensive than offensive, but he could score too. And you know, the one thing that kind of was lacking in Thurmond's career is his shooting. He shot like 42% during his career. Obviously not great for a center, but, you know, it was during a different time in which the shooting percentages were still lower. So I think that deserves some context, but even for that time, not a great percentage.
No, not at all. And that wasn't, I mean, he you know, despite those high scoring and real gaudy scoring numbers as well, he's even admitted, yeah, like, you know, said he's that more of a defensive player. And if you watch highlights from him too, you could tell he's very awkward on the offensive end. He had a decent, like, there's a lot of highlights that'll show he has a decent kind of fadeaway jumper, but that's probably another thing where, like, you know, you got to remember the era as well. They're probably like, Nate, get down there, what are you doing, man? And he's like, all right, fine, like, sorry, like, I won't take anymore. And they're like, I went in, but don't do that ever again, like, you know, get down there, you're 6'11". So, you know, you always got to remember the era a little bit as well. But yeah, around the basket, it was kind of awkward finishing. And yeah, just wasn't a polished offensive player, but was able to still rack up the points and rack up, you know, a decent amount of success regardless of it.
Yeah, and he was considered to be the by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, called him the best defender that he had ever faced. They faced off in the playoffs 2 years in a row, and I believe in the 73 Western Finals, which Golden State actually won, upsetting the Bucks, who were significantly a better team. He held Kareem to below 50% shooting in four of the six games, including 2 8-of-24 games. So was able to really defend him effectively and defend Wilt, you know, effectively enough as well, even though obviously there's a big, you know, Thurmond was around 6'10 or so, you know, he was a big, strong, you know, strapping guy, great rebounder, great defender, but obviously, you know, he's like everybody else almost, he is was undersized compared to Wilt. So the Warriors did return to prominence a little bit in 73, as I mentioned. They made that upset in that playoffs. Rick Barry returned to the team, and there's a good article in the SI Vault, what could have, now may be. And Thurmond just basically said, you know, they talk about the great combinations they've played together in this league, you know, mentioning Weston Baylor and Cousy and Russell. And he said, Rick and I should have been one of those great combinations. Certainly, I'm glad to have Rick back so we can try to do all those things together. But that doesn't mean that I don't get sad thinking about the 5 years we wasted. We could have had that. We could have been in that group. We might have produced championships. Now we're finally getting our chance, but we're both getting older and we both got bad knees, which is a very straightforward thing to say. But it didn't really, you know, by then he was getting older, and he was in his early 30s and was slowing down a little bit, and was traded away to Chicago heading into the 75 season. And, you know, at that point, the Bulls were kind of a powerhouse team that couldn't make it over the hunt. And both teams ended up facing off in the Western Conference Finals, which was sort of a surprise for the Warriors to be there. They were the two powerhouses. Warriors were a pretty young team that got Phil Smith and that got Jamal Wilkes, and along with Barry were able to, you know, they ended up, of course, having a big upset to win the championship that year. And the Bulls, you know, it's kind of right at the end of the, you know, the Chet Walker, Norm Van Leer, Bob Love team, and there was already kind of some discontent there between them and between Dick Motta. And Thurmond also ran into kind of some bumps in Dick Motta's offense as well. It was kind of used more in the high post where he wasn't really as effective.
Yeah, and it's you look at that team, and again, you know, they won 47 games, you know, made it to the Western Conference Finals, but then by the next year, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, they're fall apart. I think they win something like 24, 25 games. Like, that was, like you're saying, that was it. That was kind of the last gasp. And you look at the trade, you know, getting traded for Clifford Ray, Nathan, and Clifford Ray at that point only, I think, 25 years old. So it's a definite, like, we need this one more piece and let's go for it. Let's try it. Let's get, you know, as much veterans as we can. Let's try it. And you know, they just couldn't do it. And then it ended up, you know, obviously the next year after, like I said, they kind of fell apart. And then it wouldn't be until 1984 or until, in a better part, until the late 80s, until they kind of came back to prominence. But they had a number of years of struggle after this.
Yeah, and then he, in the next year, he shipped off to Cleveland, where he finished his career, plays most of the rest of that year, and then a little bit of the next year. And at this point, he was playing, you know, off the bench, 16, 20 minutes, but it was able to, you know, go 100%, you know, because of that. Sorry, I was about to cough, but I did not cough. Here, I'll take a little a 5-second break so we know to edit.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And he was effective in those minutes and was able to kind of play the level, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. There's an SI Vault article called "A Cavalier Attitude is Paying Off" and talking about his relationship with Bill Fitch, who kind of was able to, who, you know, the situation in Chicago was a little bit dysfunctional. So he was able to, you know, adjust there, was more comfortable with Fitch. And the Cavs had, a surprisingly decent team after, you know, struggling with the start. They had Jim Brewer. They had Jim Jones. They had Austin Carr, of course, who dealt with injuries but was, you know, pretty productive there. You know, they had Fitz Walker, Bingo Bob, you know, those type of guys. So they no one who was like a huge star, but they had, you know, they were just kind of a good team by committee kind of thing, and they were able to upset the Bullets in the Miracle Richfield, which we talked about previously in our Game 7s episode. And then Jim Jones got hurt right before the playoff series against Boston, and you know, Thurman played more than he was used to. He did average 10.5 points per game, 10.7 rebounds, and 3.5 assists per game as a 34-year-old, but just didn't quite have it. And then he's quoted in a Vice.com piece saying, you know, if Jones hadn't broken his foot, we would have won. We had the best record in the league in the second half of the season. We were rolling. We were tough. I had a couple of bad breaks in my career as far as championship thing, and that was the biggest one. We had all the pieces. But he did end up getting his number retired in Cleveland, even though he didn't play long for the Cavs. But it was just sort of a, you know, when he came there to play, it was sort of, you know, this great local boy, you know, comes home type story. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously not on the level of what LeBron would do later, but some similarities to that, obviously, you know, being from Akron and being a great, you know, one of the great players of all time, even though what he accomplished in Cleveland wasn't significant, it was still, you know, neat to see him. He was his number 42 was retired for both teams, for the Warriors and for the Cavs.
Yeah, and come on, Cleveland needs something. You can't, yeah, you know, don't take this away.
Right. Well,
they didn't have a lot. Like, now they have a lot.
They have championship. Now they have LeBron.
Championships. Yeah. They needed that at that point. So. Yes. And for the next 30 years, unfortunately. But now they're good. Hey, everything's good now.
So, all right. So, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA. Find us at harborparoxysm.com and check out our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get podcasts. If you're able to, leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you're doing. Hopefully everyone's enjoying the basketball mysteries of the 70s. We're continuing this series throughout the summer. So please let us know if you're enjoying it. And until next time, thanks for listening. Next time on Basketball Mysteries of the 1970s.
And, you know, they can only have 80 players. And all of a sudden, there's this new league opens up, and now there's 200 players. But what they're finding out is most of those 200 players are just as good as the ones that were playing in the NBA.